Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now get the guns, the drugs, from my generation. I'll take the fall, the state, and across the nation. And it's a sin, the guns, the fake, the fraud, the messing with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out.
With Tony Acero, Harry Broders, and Rick Balin.
WrestleMania is in full swing for both brands, although it's not even SmackDown's day, and yet somehow we spent almost as much time discussing SmackDown on Raw tonight as we... Never mind. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Raw Reaction. My name is Harry Broders. Unfortunately, due to work obligations, the Down Since Day One co-host Tony Acero will not be able to join us tonight. However, once again joining the program, making him a repeat offender... That might be your nickname, the repeat offender.
I'm all right with that.
Nicholas Marsico, what's up, Nick?
Hello, everybody. Good evening. Good riddance is later. But good evening, and how are you doing?
I'm all right. So, how was your weekend? Did you watch the game?
I did not watch the game. I don't have cable, and I could have watched it on my phone, but the screen is just, you know, too small for me to really care enough. And, you know, I'm a Jets fan, so I'm just going to, like, sit around and suffer for the rest of my life. So that's what I'm going to do.
Speaking as a Bills fan, I sympathize with your plight.
Yeah, you know, it's how we do up in New York. We just are sad all the time.
Unless you have the other Manning brother, that's the only team that can apparently beat New England in the big game.
Yeah, well, you know, that was, I don't even know when that was. I pay so little attention anymore. It was a couple of years ago, right? How many years was that?
There was a couple of years between them because Eli did it twice. I don't remember the specifics, but.
Anyway, we're talking
right,
Raw,
so
aren't we?
Yes, that's the current plan anyway. And if you're down for it, we might get into some Elimination Chamber predictions a little bit later on in the show. So, but that'll
talk
be later
that,
once
sure.
We actually get through the meat. That'll be a little bit later once we get through the actual meat and potatoes of tonight's broadcast. Raw comes to us from Portland, Oregon, the first Raw of February 2017, already into the second month of the year. Year's going by way too quickly once again. But our opening segment sees Joe sign his Raw contract, Roman Reigns interrupt, and Mick Foley set up Joe versus Roman Reigns for tonight's main event. And I know you specifically had something about this segment that you wanted to talk about, so I'm going to give you the reins to give your thoughts on this segment first, and then I'll chime in with my thoughts.
Just a little bit confused. I didn't actually end up getting a chance to see the main event, so I want to find out from you how the reaction was, us from the fans, but my curiosity is, so Joe goes out there, and the crowd is actually booing him. The crowd in Portland were fantastic. They were doing everything they did. It was just wonderful. But the crowd out there was actually booing him. You know, for his relationship with Stephanie, his relationship with Triple H, for putting out Seth Rollins, who the crowd obviously likes very much. And the first thought they have is to send out Roman Reigns. The best thing you can do to get a guy cheered is to put Roman Reigns in front of him. And it was just very confusing to me. I don't know why they did it. It didn't seem to harm things that much during the actual segment. But what happened during the actual match? What was the crowd's reaction? Were they on Joe's side? Were they on Roman's side? Was it mixed?
It was honestly probably the closest to that Cena crowd reaction that Roman, I think, has really gotten ever, because you could tell that there was a lot of people there that were rooting for Joe, but at the same time, you could definitely tell that Portland had more than its fair share of people that were involved with the Roman Empire as well.
That's fair. I just think it would have made a lot more sense to position him as a strong heel that you got to boo immediately. I mean, have him beat up Sami Zayn or something like that. Why not? Not like he was doing anything important tonight. He was just losing to Jericho for no good reason. So why not just have him beat up on Sami Zayn?
I actually have a theory about that, and I'll get to my theory about that in a few moments.
Okie doke.
All right. Obviously, the opening segment ties directly into our main event, so we will discuss the main event here as well. And the main event does indeed see Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns, and it does see Samoa Jones. Wow. Okay. I'm off to a fantastic start. Samoa Joe pick up a pinfall victory over Roman Reigns with a spinning Uranagi slam, similar to a rock bottom, but done almost kind of like a black hole slam of this style, if that makes sense.
I didn't see it, but I'm wondering if you're familiar at all with Ethan Page, my good friend All Ego Ethan Page, and his spinning Dwayne.
The spinning Dwayne.
Was it anything like that?
It looked very similar, except he sent Roman off the ropes and caught him on the rebound with it, whereas I know Ethan does the spinning Dwayne from a standing position.
Fair enough. It was very cool. Sounds not bad. I'm sure he's not going to be doing the muscle buster up on the main roster.
He's not going to be doing the muscle buster at all, apparently. The WWE's apparently put the kibosh in that move ever since what happened to Tyson Kidd happened.
He's been doing it for a while, though. He's been doing it to everybody. He did it to Nakamura. He did it to Balor. He's been doing it to people. That's how he won the title in Massachusetts, from my recollection.
Maybe they don't want him using it on the main roster, then.
I have a feeling that's probably what's going to happen. I had a strong feeling that he wasn't going to be using that move anymore once he got pulled up. But that notwithstanding, I like the Uranagi, so I'm fine. It's one of his signature moves anyway, out of the corner.
No, it wasn't the FT Joe. It was center of the ring.
It is one of his ones. No, but I'm saying it is somewhat similar to one of his signature moves, so I'll take it. I'll be okay with it.
Yes. We did actually get to see a lot of Joe's signature offense in this match, too. The chop kick, and then instead of using the senton to close the combination, he used the Muda flash drive elbow.
Very nice.
We did get to see the Enziguri in the corner again as well, similar to what he did to Rollins last week with the boot in the corner followed up by the Enziguri. Another standing senton, this one on the outside with Roman Reigns on the mat before the match actually started. He also hit one in the middle of the ring as well.
I do like that they did that to start the segment, how to take him out before the match as well, kind of continues that vibe going for Joe, just kind of not really giving a crap about anything. So I think it was a good way to start, have him get the advantage like that.
All right, so you mentioned that you would have preferred to see him take on somebody like Sami Zayn in his Raw debut, and we'll get to Sami Zayn and Chris Jericho one-on-one, our United States title match from earlier tonight, a little bit later on in the broadcast. But the point that I wanted to raise a little bit earlier that I kind of teased is, I actually think Sami Zayn would be the perfect WrestleMania opponent for Samoa Joe.
It wouldn't be bad. I wouldn't be against it for sure. I still don't think that even doing it tonight would... Good.
I was just going to say, you could kind of do it as a byproduct of the simmering Foley and Stephanie feud. Stephanie selects Samoa Joe to represent her. Mick Foley selects Sami Zayn to represent him.
You could go there. I am so significantly, sincerely hoping that the Stephanie Foley thing just kind of stays on the back burner type of deal, where it's referenced a lot on TV, but they never go formal with it. Just because it's been nice, because there hasn't been a whole lot of general manager interference. I mean, Stephanie's been a bitch, which is what she does. It's, you know, she's been kind of doing her thing. But there hasn't been a whole lot of on either show, even, you know, they've got the Daniel Bryan Miz thing going on. But there hasn't been a whole lot of formal general manager versus wrestler feud stuff going on. And I like that. And I think if they go ahead and go that way with general manager versus general manager, it's not a horrible idea, but I think the more they just keep it out of the spotlight, the better, because it lets the wrestlers really be the focus, and that's what they have been since the brand has started. Again, the wrestlers have been the focus on both shows, and it's been nice.
All right, so that takes us into our opening contest for the evening, and that saw Bayley, who they announced would face Charlotte for the women's title next week from Las Vegas, and I will have my thoughts for what should happen for the episode of Raw next week from Vegas here in a little bit. But it will be tonight. It was Bayley versus Nia Jax, and we saw Nia Jax pick up a win after some dubious interference due to the queen of the women's division, Charlotte. Charlotte gets involved. She makes her presence known on the apron. Bayley drop kicks her into the ring and then drop kicks her right back out. But in the process, it's distracted long enough that Nia Jax is able to catch Bayley with the Samoan drop and pick up a clean pinfall victory. Now, I don't know how much of the whole rumor mill thing you do. We tend to discuss it quite a bit here on the show. The rumor mill has a four-way for the women's title at WrestleMania. Do you think this is an opportunity for them to give Nia a big win to set her up as a potential challenger down the road at WrestleMania for the women's title?
They've been grooming her for that for the entire time. They've completely protected her. She lost to Bayley that one time, but it was from a top rope move. And I believe somebody was involved at that point. I'm not sure if I remember right. I don't think Sasha was involved. Maybe she was, but I don't recall. But either way, they've been positioning her definitely to be up there. And I think, yeah, with WrestleMania coming, they're going to end up going with a multi-woman match in that respect. I have no idea what they're going to do for SmackDown. But I think on Raw, yeah, Nia Jax is getting set up there. Will she win at WrestleMania? Probably not. But she'll be up there.
Your thoughts on the match itself?
It was a good match. I enjoyed it. I thought the crowd was amazing going behind Bayley. I was kind of taken aback a little bit by how amazingly hot they were. It was just every little thing Bayley did, they were all over. Everything that Nia Jax did, they were booing the crap out of her. And it was just, not only was it a pretty good match, but the crowd, as they always say, the crowd elevated the match up to another level. So it was actually a really, really strong opening contest.
Yeah, you almost have to look at it kind of like the fact is that it's such an easy story to tell, too, that it's the plucky babyface Bayley taking on the unstoppable monster. And as you mentioned, the crowd was really hot for all of Bayley's comebacks and all of her offense, and they were very sympathetic towards her when she was getting her ass handed to her as well. I think character-wise, Bayley might be the best in the women's division, even if she's not quite the best in the ring. I do think Charlotte's a little bit better in the ring than Bayley is, but I do think Bayley's the best character in the women's division.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially now that they're actually using her. Because when she was in limbo, it was really difficult, but now that they're actually paying attention to her, she's got that relationship with Cesaro and Sheamus going on, and just kind of she's showing what Bayley, what everybody fell in love with, is about. And yeah, it's looking really good.
It's weird that Bayley makes me want to cheer for Sheamus, and I never thought I'd say those words.
I like it.
So that clearly Bayley's doing her job correctly if she's trying to get me to cheer for Sheamus. Speaking of Sheamus, they have their taking title.
Yes, they did. Go ahead.
We'll get into that a little bit later. So apparently Braun's back to killing bitches.
Yeah, man, and I'll never be against that. And I thought for a second I was having a flashback to a few months ago, but yeah, Braun Strowman destroyed four jobbers, one of which who ran away very smartly. But I thought that they were going, you know, just all of a sudden, what month would that have been? Like November? All of a sudden, where he's calling out Foley again. It was very weird, and it was kind of an awkward setup with the whole, you know, Foley's like, fine, you want Roman Reigns? Fine, you've got him at Fastlane. Like, there was no suspense to that. It's just a scared general manager giving a guy something. You think that Braun would be like, no, I want him next week. And Foley's like, no, you've got to wait. At least give us something. It was just kind of awkward the way they went ahead and did it.
Yeah, I mean, after Strowman got involved in the match at the Royal Rumble where it was with Reigns and Owens, having a moment over here. after Strowman got involved in the Reigns Owens match at Royal Rumble, you had to figure that it was either going to be Roman Reigns' Fast Lane program or his WrestleMania program taking on Strowman. And based on the fact that they got involved in getting each other's business last week on Raw when Roman interfered in the Owens and Strowman title match last Monday night, we talked about here on The Reaction, myself, Tony, and Rick, then you kind of had to figure that it was going to be the Fast Lane program, especially since... Did you catch the subtle hint towards Roman Reigns' WrestleMania opponent in the opening segment?
The subtle hint to it, I might not have been paying enough attention. No.
When Reigns came down to the ring to confront Samoa Joe, he claimed that the ring was his yard.
I didn't even think about. Here's the thing: I thought Undertaker, and I'm like, really, dude, you're pulling out Undertaker's thing, very subliminally, not even realizing to myself that that's exactly what they're doing. That makes perfect sense. And so I feel silly for thinking of The Undertaker but not putting it together. But, yeah, I'll say this right now. I'm completely on board with Reigns versus The Undertaker. And I read a rumor. I don't know where I read it from, so who knows what it's about. But I read a rumor that Undertaker is actually pushing for putting Reigns over WrestleMania. And that, to me, might be even better than Brock breaking the streak.
Here's the issue you have with that is the only way that they put Reigns over Taker at Mania is if they're going to go full-fledged with this Roman heel turn. Because I don't think you can get that crowd to cheer Reigns if he beats Taker at Mania.
I don't know. I don't think they really even care anymore. I think they've settled into the whole cheering, booing dynamic that they've got with Cena. I think they're happy with that with Reigns at this point. Because otherwise there have been a lot of questionable decisions. That they, you know, like the Rumble, like the number 30 appearance in the Rumble, for example, they knew he was going to get booed for being number 30. They knew what the crowd was expecting. You know, they're not dumb. And so I think at this point they're okay with that reaction because, you know, it's getting from them what they want because they can pretty much do whatever the hell they want. And, you know, it's not like ticket sales are dropping because Roman Reigns is a babyface or a mixed reaction guy. So I would just like to see it because one of my favorite moments in wrestling history, and just because of the reaction from the internet, is when Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker. I stood up on my feet and cheered, and I could not wait. And moments later, I went to my phone. I could not wait to see the reaction of everybody, and it was just priceless. And to see if they will do that again, if they do it with Reigns this time, I don't know what would happen, but man, do I want to see it happen.
I don't know that Reigns beating Taker would be as surprising as people think it is, especially with the rumors that Taker's health isn't exactly doing the best, even with the hip replacement.
True. Right. Surprising, no, but the vitriol that will come from the internet when it happens will be beautiful.
I expect many a meme making fun of many a ringside fan at that particular point.
Yes, indeed. I'm sure they'll put him front row for the match.
Independent wrestling fan, I noticed you just mentioned All Eagle Ethan Page, so I'm going to assume that you're something of an independent wrestling fan here.
I am, yes indeed.
One of the darlings on the independent wrestling scene for the longest time was a gentleman by the name of Akira Tozawa.
Yes, I watched him wrestle live once at Dragon Gate USA a long, long time ago.
And actually, I pointed out to, I said, When they did the hype video for him announcing that he was going to make his Raw debut up next, I posted a message on Yes Wrestling, because we do a live Raw thread on Yes Wrestling every week for Raw, facebook.com/groups/YesWrestling. And I said, hell yeah, huge fan, love me some Tozawa. And then somebody asked me to point out a couple of his matches that they could look into in order to get a sample of what he was all about. And I suggested his Dragon Gate USA stuff, and I also suggested his PWG match against Owens.
See, I haven't seen that match, but I came across it the other day, and it's now in my YouTube watch later. So I'll be checking that out soon. Tozawa's great. I mean, even just checking out his stuff from the Cruiserweight Classic, if you want something that's very easily accessible. I mean, right there, you can just look and see just what he's about. But the dude's amazing. He's one of the guys who I stood in awe of when I watched that Dragon Gate show. Tozawa, he's the shit. And this match was a short little preview of what it's about, and it was perfect for what it needed to be.
Yeah, it was kind of a sprint here. I mean, Larry lists the time here. I'm using the 411 Mania, Larry's review here, because Tony got called into work, so Larry did the Raw review. And usually I use Tony's Raw review as kind of the format in order to give us a listing of all the results and everything here. But Akira Tozawa defeats Drew Gulak by pinfall with a snap German suplex at 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
Indeed.
Other than a nifty-looking shining wizard, I thought Akira was really crisp tonight. And the only thing that I would possibly say that I dislike is I'm so used to him using that German suplex avalanche style, almost like deadlift style, that seeing him hit a snap version of it is weird to me.
So yeah, because you use it as a snap version as a setup to something, but this time he did the snap version as the finish, which I was cool with, but you're right. No, it was a little bit jarring because I expected the snap version with the release and then the deadlift version, but you know what? Either way, it looks amazing, and Gulak was the perfect guy for him to face because Gulak knows what he's doing, and so it was nice. It was right. I was cool with it.
Yeah, let me give credit here real quick to Drew Gulak, who I think may be the most underrated performer in the cruiserweight division at this particular point in time.
Oh yeah, he's the guy that they put out there because they know when they know they need a good match, a good opponent to put somebody over and make him look good. He's the guy. And, I mean, Gulak, it's a shame, sort of, that he's getting put into a position where he's just the guy who puts everybody else over. But at the same time, it's not a bad gig to have because it means he got a job. And I think Gulak is probably okay with that in the short run. And I don't know if that's going to be his long-run thing. They kind of dropped the Tony Nese deal, but we'll see what happens.
Long-time fans would probably know that as kind of that X-Pac spot, where if you can't have a good match against X-Pac, then you are kind of SOL. Well, I guess in the cruiserweight division, now that measuring stick's name is Drew Gulak.
I would agree with that. That's a very good assessment, my friend.
All right. So the rumored Fastlane main event becomes official in our next segment as Jericho and Owens come down to the ring and have a conversation with us. Tom Brady gets put on the list because Jericho does such ridiculous things. I'll admit, I chuckled. I moved on. And then
I did. I enjoyed
Goldberg,
it.
And then Goldberg arrives.
You know, I had a sneaking feeling that Goldberg was going to show up in this segment.
Yeah, likewise. And we get the rumored Goldberg versus Kevin Owens match made for Fastlane for the Raw Universal title. First of all, my initial reaction to this was as soon as Goldberg's music hit to interrupt Owens, I'm like, oh, son of a bitch, they're going through with it.
You know,
because, I mean, I expected it to happen, but at the same time, I really didn't want it to happen because I really don't want that title on part-timers or around part-timers.
I understand that. Now, see, I've kind of gotten over the whole part-timer thing. I'm not sure when or where it happened. But I've kind of gotten over the whole part-timer thing because, you know what, in the end, when it comes to WrestleMania, I read something a while back where people were saying that WrestleMania was going to be about the future this year, but it's not, and it's never going to be, and I'm okay with that. Because, you know what, if it's going to be WrestleMania that they're going to do this for, then go ahead and go for it and let the part-timers run roughshod over the main events and let the other guys do their thing in the lower card because, you know, the next month they're going to steal the show. Like at Payback when Zayn and Owens stole the show, you know, after being, you know, marginalized at WrestleMania, you know, a short while prior. To me, at this point, I'm willing to just bypass it and overlook it. My curiosity, though, is are they going to go through with putting the title on Goldberg? Or are they going to do something else? I mean, because obviously you've got the Brock Lesnar factor in there. You know, you could have Jericho screw up some interference and almost cost Owens the title, but then have Lesnar come out and save the title for Owens by you know, maliciously taking out Goldberg and you know, ruining Goldberg's shot. I really don't think they're putting the title on Goldberg is my main point here. I think they're keeping it away, and I think Brock's going to stop it. Just because I don't think Brock cares about the title, I think Brock cares about Goldberg.
As much as I'd like to believe that, I get the sneaking suspicion that they're actually going to take this opportunity to put the belt on Goldberg because I don't think they view Jericho versus Owens as a WrestleMania-worthy title match, even though this has been building slow burn now for the better part of about a year.
And I think about that. I was thinking about it that way, and my thought ends up going to, it's okay, because they'll just put it in the mid-card. They're not going to use – the Universal title has not been elevated to being a world title yet, because they've kept it as a mid-card title. You know, they've had Roman Reigns, their big man, you know, going after it, you know, but they've really made it look like a joke title because the two guys holding it essentially are just standing around making jokes. So this year at WrestleMania, if they do Owens versus Jericho for that title or for both titles or for whatever they're going to do, I think no matter what, unless Finn Balor magically returns and, you know, something happens and they put him in a slot somewhere, it's going to be a mid-card, probably on the lower end of the card at that. And it's just that's where it's going to be this year. You know, they'll build it up once WrestleMania is over and make it into a legitimate title. But right now, I think it's just a red prop, and that's all it is.
Well, I think that the SmackDown title match is going to have more prestige behind it going into WrestleMania. And the reason I say that is because we'll get into our Elimination Chamber predictions a little bit later on, as I said. But I genuinely feel like the way that the storyline is headed for SmackDown, it's setting the surface for what could be either a straight-up singles match or a triple threat match. And that has been tying in with the booking on SmackDown for the better part of the last 6 months. And it's rare that we have the opportunity to see something last that long in the current WWE climate, which is why I am significantly looking more forward to that title opportunity rather than the Raw title scene going into WrestleMania.
Agreed. At the same time, though, they've got Goldberg and Lesnar and, Reigns and Undertaker. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two ended up taking the spot anyway, especially if they do Orton versus Wyatt. They're not going to close WrestleMania with Orton versus Wyatt. There's no way in hell that it happens. So if that ends up being the title match, and well, of course, we'll get to it later, but if they do get that to the title match, then, you know, I'm not sure what their plans are, but I don't think either one of the titles closes the show unless they decide to go with Cena versus Orton, at which point I see that they would close the title with the match with the title, or the show with the title match. Jeez, I'm having a you moment. Unless it's Cena versus Orton, you're welcome. Unless it's Cena versus Orton, they're not closing WrestleMania with either one of the titles. Guaranteed.
Oh, no, I agree with that completely. All right, let's go ahead and continue our discussion of the show here. And we go into the contractually obligated tag team title rematch for Sheamus and Cesaro as they take on the club of Anderson and Gallows. Club retain via disqualification thanks to Big Cass kicking Luke Gallows square in the dome piece after Gallows attacks Enzo. Triple threat match for the tag team titles at Fastlane, you think?
One would assume so much, yes.
I think you do that in order to set up protecting Enzo and Cass from taking the fall at Fastlane to set them up for a 2-on-2 title match at WrestleMania where Enzo and Cass finally win the titles.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I would expect that to be probably the case. As far as the match and the segment itself, it was pretty standard fare, as you might say. But yeah, my expectation is probably Enzo and Cass taking the titles at the WrestleMania, and that's just the way it needs to be. It's good. It might be a little bit late because they were hot, you know, a year ago or whatever it was they came up. They were hot then, and they probably could have taken the belts from the New Day. But either way, this year I think they're still hot after this whole Jinder and Rusev debacle. I think they're going to heat themselves back up again and they'll be okay for WrestleMania.
Do you think Enzo and Cass being at ringside telegraphed the fact that they were going to go to some kind of screwy finish here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's always a guarantee. You know, when it comes to, you know, like for example, on SmackDown when they have the commentators on the at ringside and even back when they had Raw that way as well. You know, it's always going to happen on there, whether it's a distraction or it's going to be, you know, somebody throwing somebody into somebody else. It always happens. If they have somebody at ringside, you know, 99 times out of 100 times. No, screw that. 99 times out of 99 times, it's going to happen. Every single time, there's going to be some sort of involvement, even if it's just a little bit of a distraction. But, yeah, there was no way that them being out there wasn't going to cause some sort of ruckus, and, of course, it did.
It broke into a major league ruckus, and not the guy from CZW.
That's my boy, man. Love Ruckus. Miss Ruckus. Just a little bit, though. Not a lot.
All right. So we get the official update on Seth Rollins, and we kind of talked about this here. The video made its way around, originally posted on Reddit, where clear as day, if you listen closely, you can clear as day hear Joe ask Rollins if he's okay, and Rollins say, "I hope so." Well, apparently, the answer to that question is no. Rollins tears his MCL, and his Mania participation is questionable at best. I don't think they rush Rollins back for Mania. I think they do Triple H and Rollins at SummerSlam at this point. My question to you becomes twofold.
I would be against it at a smaller show. But go ahead. Go ahead.
My question to you becomes twofold at this point. Do you just chalk this up to one of those things, or do you think that there's going to be some kind of bad rep to Joe, and that both of the opportunities that he had had on the main roster up until tonight, somebody had gotten injured?
Nah, it was an accident. I don't think it's going to have any effect. I think Triple H understands how it can be, and I think it'll be just fine. I don't think Vince will come into play either.
All right, and then what do they do with Seth Rollins in order to keep him ready before? You said that you think they do Seth and Triple H at a smaller show?
They could, and I think they should. I mean, at this point, with the way the network is structured, I mean, it's not like it makes that much of a hell of a difference in any event. But, I mean, if you want to make the Raw pay-per-view seem more important and you want to make Seth Rollins' want to get the Triple H more important, you do one of two things. Either you have to have Seth go through people as soon as he returns and leading up to finally getting to Triple H, but they can't do the shit they already did. You know, what they did the last few months by just having him call out Triple H after ignoring that for a while and then finally starting to call him out again, I mean, so much momentum was lost. And then last week's show, all the momentum came back again after TakeOver and then after the promo from Triple H last week, all the momentum came back again just to come to a screeching halt with a knee injury. So if they're going to go ahead and get the heat back again and get this back rolling, either they do the match immediately because Seth demands it and gets under Triple H's skin and Triple H makes it happen, or Triple H has to set up a number of people for Seth to go through, whether it's week after week or show after show, because what do they have between WrestleMania and SummerSlam? There's probably two Raw pay-per-views in there, I would assume. You know, they have to have Rollins facing people that Triple H puts in his way. It's the only way you're going to make it happen. And even then, I think it might just be too much because it's a long time to wait. That's a whole year of waiting. And I don't know if it's going to keep the momentum going.
Well, it was August of last year, the end of August of last year, where Triple H turned on Seth. So I think there would be something kind of poetic about the match happening at SummerSlam if it does get delayed that long.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not necessarily against it as long as they do it right. I just fear that they're not going to do it right because of how poorly they handled it going back to when after it happened. I mean, Seth got a bunch of title shots, and he didn't really earn them. He just got them. You know, and it's like if Triple H and Stephanie are so against him, why are they letting him wrestle for the title so many times? You know, he gets screwed by Jericho and Owens. Why does he get another match? You know, what's the point of that? What's the sense? If Triple H is railing against him, why is he wrestling for the title? And so there are holes like that were in the story that I felt so annoyed that when he finally called Triple H out, it's like, all right, my fingers are crossed. I'm hoping they just kind of, you know, whitewash this all with video packages, which they have. But now they've got another obstacle, another hurdle. You know, what are they going to do while Rollins is injured? Are they going to just ignore him? If he's going to be out for, say, 2 months or more, you know, are they going to just ignore him and maybe wait until he comes back as a surprise? And what are they going to do to keep momentum going? You know, is Triple H going to show up and, you know, be patting some mojo on the back and be in his corner? Or is Triple H going to disappear again? There are so many variables, and it's so difficult to figure out what they're going to do just because of all of the variables and all of the past missteps. I worry about what they're going to do in the next few months.
I mean, obviously, time will tell here. We're going to end up being at least 2 months away from Seth Rollins coming anywhere near a WWE ring again by the looks of things, depending on the severity of the injury. I've heard a timetable set up somewhere along the lines of 6 to 8 weeks for Rollins' injury. So we'll see what ends up happening, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, because if it's you know, 6 weeks, then, you know, he might have a shot. I mean, when's WrestleMania? What, 50-something days away?
55, I believe.
55. And how much is 6 weeks? What's that time frame on there?
42.
Okay. So, I mean, it's a possibility that they could keep going with it. The thing is, they'd have to be real, real cocksure. They'd have to be really ballsy to go ahead and go with the match at this point. Unless they know something we don't know. Unless it's not really a real injury.
That would be my big concern, too, is if under the assumption that the injury is legitimate. My biggest concern is that they rush it back, and he comes back for Mania, and then something happens within the first minute or two of the match at Mania, and they're screwed.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad. That would be pretty dumb. So, I mean, it's really, really impossible to say. It's just because you never know. I'm going to go under the assumption that it's real, too, just because at this point, you know, after watching the video, and I didn't see the video from Reddit with them talking to each other, but just watching the actual footage from Raw when it happened, I mean, that was ugly. And so I completely believe that it is 100% legitimate. Whether or not it's as bad as they're saying it is, that's the question. You know, when they brought back Cena, I mean, look, Cena's a superhuman, we all know this, but when they brought Cena back for the Rumble back in 2008, they fudged the numbers as far as how long he was going to be gone. He was never going to be gone for a year. He was never going to be gone for 7-8 months. You know, they knew that his timetable was maybe 3 to 4 months, and then they brought him back sooner than that because he's superhuman. So they might be saying 6 to 8 weeks, but that might actually mean he's gooder than 3 to 4. You know, so it's really tough because they fudge those numbers all the time to, you know, create surprises. You know, we might see Rollins show up at Fastlane for all we know and make something happen.
So there's one thing that has become abundantly clear on Monday Night Raw these days. Creative has no idea what to do with the New Day now that they lost the tag team titles.
No, not really. And I was kind of hoping, and Michael Cole gave me a shining star of hope. See what I did there? He gave me a shining star of hope. That maybe the shining stars are going to get an upset victory. Because at one point in the match, Corey Graves said that he was surprised at how well the Shining Stars were doing, or maybe Byron Saxton, one of the two guys, I don't know who it was. I think it was Byron, actually, said he was so surprised, and Cole out and out just disagreed with him and said, no, I'm not surprised at all. You're wrong, stupid, because these guys, I've known they've had the talent all along. So to me, I was like, oh, whoa, are they going to, like, start pushing these guys the way they belong and, you know, have them up there to wrestle matches in which they win, and then they lost. And then, you know, the segment ended, and then the New Day did their thing, and they talked about ice cream, and everybody was happy. But for a second, for a shimmering, shining second there, now I'm just mentioning women's promotions, for just a moment there, I thought maybe these guys are going to start being legitimate, like I thought they were a year ago when they were legitimate for 10 minutes. But, you know, I guess time will tell us, as we say, on that one. But I have no – my hope was snuffed out as soon as the match was over.
Honestly speaking, what is there really for the New Day to do at this point other than go their separate ways and try singles careers or leave Kofi and Xavier in the tag team division and let Big E try his hand at a singles run?
I would like to see that happen. Leave Kofi and Xavier together. Let them do their thing. Big E can be loosely associated with them still because they are great as a trio. I mean, they're still entertaining. Is the thing in there? The thing is, WWE has no idea what to do with tag teams. That's the main problem. Is they could still have a great run as a 3-man tag team and do their thing. The thing is, they have no idea what to do with teams. If they're not fighting, and this has been a problem for as long as you can remember, you know, if they're not fighting for the titles, WWE doesn't know what to do. You know, they don't have a lot of teams who are going to be actively at the same time popular and pushed and in any sort of, you know, realm to compete with each other. you know, which is why we have matches like we had tonight with the Shining Stars, where I was hoping beyond hope that maybe they were going to give them a little bit of shine. Because if that happened, then maybe you've got a little bit of parity. And maybe you've got, you know, something for the New Day to do that involves the New Day staying together until maybe a couple cycles go around and maybe they get another title shot. But no. You know, so, I mean, I would love to see Big E get a shot on his own. I think Big E could be that first black champion that we're all looking for. I think he could, I mean, other than The Rock, depending on what your side is on the argument there. But I think Big E could be that guy who takes the title and becomes, you know, becomes the man. I think, I really believe it. I believe it since the second I saw him in NXT.
Booker T?
That's another one on there as well. They only gave him the world title in WWE, and they didn't. And it was only when he was it was only during the invasion angle. So I don't count it because he came in as a champion.
He won the title as King. He won the world title as King Booker in 2006, sir.
Still don't buy it because that was the mini title.
Oh no, I agree. The world title was a secondary title at that point, but.
I'm thinking, but good.
I was just going to say, I would say the closest they've ever come to probably giving the WWE title to an African-American gentleman would be Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, and then whatever happened with him happened. And if he comes back, that'd be amazing, by the way, because apparently there's talk about that. But, I think Lashley was on the fast track to that, and then I can't recall what happened to that, I guess. He just wanted to go his own way because he wanted to do the MMA thing and WWE wasn't allowing it. But, no, I think that Big E could be that guy. I think he could be the guy who holds – I mean, it's difficult to say now, of course, because there's two fucking titles again. So, you know, you give him the Universal title. Say you give Big E the Universal title tomorrow. Is it really a big deal? Because it's really just a miniature title. It's not really a big deal anymore. You know, at least when there were two titles, when there was the WWE title and the world title, at least the world title had some lineage, and they gave it to an established star right away with Triple H. You know, as much as people shit on that, at least they gave it to a guy who's a multiple-time world champion already. This time, they give it to Owens, and then they have, you know, have the joke show, as I was talking about earlier. So, if a Big E wins the title, does it matter?
Well, you could argue that they were going to attempt to do something with the establishing the Universal title with Finn Balor before he decided to before he got his shoulder thrown out at SummerSlam.
I agree, and they probably were. Problem is their recovery or lack thereof has been embarrassing. You know, I'm so glad that they gave Owens the title and he's had a run for a good chunk of time, but it's just been embarrassing because he's a funny guy. Him and Jericho are great. They're hilarious. They're wonderful to watch. But when I'm watching a supposed main event feud with a supposed, you know, bigger than world universal title, you know, I'm expecting a little bit of fire and a little bit of passion, and we haven't been getting that. You know, every once in a while, Owens will raise his voice, but there's no passion. There's no caring. It's just there. And it's sad. And, maybe they had something planned with Balor. I mean, he beat Reigns, for Christ's sake, to earn the title shot. So, I mean, maybe they had plans for him and to do something big. But their recovery, and I said, or lack thereof, has been embarrassing and sad.
I mean, not only did he beat Reigns to get the opportunity for the title match, he also beat Rollins clean at SummerSlam despite blowing out his shoulder, too. So clearly, the intent with Balor was there. It's just one of those cases of wrong place, wrong time when it came to that injury for Balor. All right, so
and then
we'll
that
move on.
The question later. Nick, go ahead. Yeah, let's move on, because we'll talk about this all day. Let's move on.
All right, and we go into the newest announcement for the Hall of Fame class of 2017 with the Rock and Roll Express. Not a very big reign in the WWE. Well, technically they were around for a while back in like the late 90s. But on the basis of their NWA work, I figure that it's a more than a befitting okay, of course it's the Rock and Roll Express that tripped me all up. I do believe it's more than a befitting inductee here based on the basis of their NWA work, even though their WWF run was lackluster.
Yeah, No, of course. I mean, they were one of the great teams. I mean, I've gone back, and even before I had the network, I used to scounge around and find matches with them, and, you know, it's just they're amazing, you know, with all the matches with the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express and all those teams from back then. Are the Midnight Express in, by the way, or are they going to be next year? I don't even know who's in the fucking Hall of Fame.
Who are you referring to?
The Midnight Express need to go in, too. The Midnight Express. Are they in?
The Midnight Express are not in the Hall of Fame, to my knowledge.
Well, maybe they'll be next year. But, yeah, I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Express, yeah, no, they're one of the most amazing teams in the world ever in history. They were so much fun to watch. They were ahead of their time. They use, you know, they use that phrase all the time, but they were ahead of their time. You know, they were doing stuff that, you know, you would – that the guys now, they were doing stuff that guys like fucking Bubba Ray Dudley would call flippy shit back, you know, 30 years ago. You know, as much as they had, you know, their great selling and their great, you know, hot tags and all that wonderful stuff that they're known for, you know, they did a lot of really over-the-top, charismatic in-ring action, and they were way ahead of their time. And so I'm in love with them as a team. And I'm glad to see him go in. As little stock as I put in the Hall of Fame, it means a lot to the guys who go in. So I'm glad to see them go in.
I don't dislike the inductee. I don't think they should have been announced this early.
It really depends on who they're going to be bringing in later on. I mean, they got Angle, but I mean, who else? Are there rumors about who else is going in?
Yeah, there have been two other names that have been leaked already, even though they haven't been officially announced.
Who's that?
Those two names are Diamond Dallas Page and Beth Phoenix.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard rumblings of Christian. Am I wrong about that?
I have not heard anything about Christian, no.
That might have just been some random person on the internet who said that. But, okay. I buy DDP and Beth Phoenix. Well, then if that's the case with DDP, for example, then they're only announcing them this early because they want to make a bigger statement with DDP later on. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, if the class is going to be them and DDP and Beth Phoenix, it's going to be some other smaller name guy. And then Angle, I think right now is a fine way to announce it. Now they're going to wait a few more weeks until they announce somebody else now.
I'm curious as to who the posthumous inductee is going to be this year. I've heard rumblings of Rick Rude, but nothing confirmed.
Yeah, that's what I actually was going to say. That's something I did hear about, too. It could happen. I'm up for that. I love Rick Rude.
If all you fat sweat hogs would shut up for a minute. Anyway, U.S. title match. Chris Jericho, Sami Zayn. Jericho retains the U.S. title after an Owens super kick leads to a code breaker for the pinfall. Sammy's kind of in a holding pattern right now. Do you think we see a rematch at Fastlane for the title since Owens is going to have other things that he's going to have to focus on?
Probably, yeah, just because they've got nothing else to do. They have not established any sort of mid-card on Raw whatsoever. It's a big, big fault they have is that they've not really established much of anything on Raw. That's why the whole show is always in such a holding pattern. They haven't really established anything on that show. But yeah, I think they're probably going to go ahead and go with another rematch because of the interference. I think the match itself happened just for the sake of happening, you know, because, I mean, I guess they're setting up showing that Owens is willing to go ahead and keep having Jericho's back because he's begging and pleading and hoping that Jericho keeps having his back for Goldberg. But I mean, in the end, like I brought up earlier, I wouldn't have minded them having Sami Zayn step up to Samoa Joe for what he did last week, and having Joe beat the crap out of him, because in the end, Sami Zayn can get beat down by 50 different people and get up, and the crowd will still love him. He is going to be in that role forever, and he is going to be just fine. So, I mean, this match, it happened. It was what it was, I guess. It served a small, small purpose.
Yeah, the match itself was perfectly fine, and unfortunately, given the two participants in this match, fine isn't a description that I should be saying with any kind of emphasis. I shouldn't be happy about fine between these two, and I think that's where the booking of the show kind of comes in and works against them.
The match last week was better than this one, though. So at least we'll give them that. That they did have a better match the previous week.
All right, so we move on here. And outside of the King himself, I have to say my favorite gimmick in the Cruiserweight division right now is Austin Aries, Dick Interviewer.
He is very entertaining. I do like Austin Aries, and I'm excited for his return whenever he does come back to wrestle again.
Never thought I'd see the day where Samoa Joe and Austin Aries were going to wrestle on Monday Night Raw, let alone
right?
on
Isn't
the same
ridiculous?
Broadcast at some point down the road.
Isn't that ridiculous?
But clearly we're heading towards that particular moment happening. Now, the question becomes, as far as Aries goes here, he has an in-ring interview with the aforementioned King Neville to set up the announcement that due to Rich Swann's ankle injury, and yeah, Murphy's Law once again striking Monday Night Raw, there's going to be a 5-way elimination match on 205 Live tomorrow night to determine the number one contender for the Cruiserweight title at Fastlane. It is Rich Swann, Cedric Alexander, Noam Dar. I corrected myself. Cedric Alexander, Noam Dar, Jack Gallagher, Tony Nese, and TJ Perkins in an elimination match tomorrow night on 205 Live to determine who gets the opportunity against Neville at Fastlane. That ends up breaking into a fracas. And we come back from said fracas with a 6-man tag match because apparently Teddy Long is part of creative these days, which sees Cedric Alexander pick up the win for his team, hitting the lumbar check on Noam Dar. Cedric gets the win tonight. Do you think that teases him winning the number one contendership tomorrow on 205 Live?
I think having him enter first in the whole, what does Larry call it? The rotating door? The revolving door? Promo. I think having Cedric come out first was the first hint that they want him to win. Does he win? I don't know. They also had Gallagher at the very end there knock Neville out of the ring at the end of the fracas, as he called it. So, you know, I don't know. But I know that Nese isn't going to win. I know that Dar is not going to win. I know that Perkins is not going to win. So it's either going to be Cedric or it's going to be Jack Gallagher. And I think it's going to be between those two at the end of the match also. I also would like to see the match last the entire goddamn show tomorrow night, because that would be fantastic. It's not going to happen, but I have a dream.
Well, I want to see Akira Tozawa kill another bitch tomorrow night, so I'd be okay with it going.
I'd be okay with it going
for most of the show.
Yeah, so they give us that little warm up match first, and then they give us that match for the rest of the show. That would work. But one thing I do want to bring up about the Cruiserweights, and it continues to just boggle my mind and bother me. I brought it up when I was on the show a few weeks ago. If they're not going to really integrate them into the show, just do something else. You know, they got to change the ropes. They got to change the ring skirt. They got to change the colors. Just stop it. They don't do it for the women. Why do it? They don't do it for the tag teams. Why do it for the Cruiserweights? Just let them be part of the show. And if you're not going to let them be part of the show, then give them the first hour or give them the first 30 minutes, whatever you want to do, have them promote 205 Live for the following night, and then move on. You know, don't separate their segments as if they're regular parts of the show, but then change everything up and make it look like it's something different. It's jarring. It makes them feel like outcasts and outsiders. They don't feel like they're a part of Raw. They've never felt like a part of Raw. And unless they stop the bullshit with the ropes and stop the bullshit with the color change and stop all that crap, they're going to continue feeling like outsiders. You know, thankfully the crowd in Portland was amazing, and Tozawa and Gulak got a great reaction, which was wonderful to see. But they feel like outsiders. And if they're going to be outsiders, then make them outsiders. Give them the first, you know, like I said, half an hour, 45 minutes, and then be done with it and move on with the rest of your show. Because to me, it pulls everything to a screeching halt when, oh, here we go. Here's the purple ropes. Something's going to happen on here, but it's going to be a complete 180 from everything they've been doing on the show so far, and it breaks up the entire flow, and it messes with me, and I don't like it. I don't know if I'm the only person who feels that way, but that's my rant for that.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that feel that in regards to the whole Cruiserweights thing there, is that if you're going to make them stand out separate from the show itself, then actually let them wrestle a different style than the rest of the show wrestles. The identifying style of the Cruiserweights from the Cruiserweight Classic really just hasn't been there for what we've seen on Raw from this particular group of Cruiserweights.
Nope. It looks like they're just a bunch of little guys fighting each other. And that's not what it's supposed to be.
That took us into our main event, which, as we talked about earlier, Joe defeated Roman Reigns there. And that will wrap us up for Monday Night Raw tonight. Give me a few seconds here, and I'm just like, you know what the problem with doing a preview for Elimination Chamber is going to be here?
What's that?
There's a grand total of 4 matches announced so far.
Huh, that's more than I thought there were. I'll be honest with you. I know that there's an Elimination Chamber match, and I don't know the rest. Did I miss something? Did they announce these on SmackDown last week? Cause I'm pretty sure I watched the show last week, but maybe I didn't.
Talking Smack, a couple of them became official. One of them became official on SmackDown. 2 others became official on Talking Smack. The one that became official on SmackDown, and I guess we'll lead off with this one first, is Nikki Bella versus Natalya, and no disqualification.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, there's no way Natalya wins the match. Nikki wins, and everybody moves on.
Yeah, Nikki wins and gets set up for her match with Alexa Bliss for the women's title at WrestleMania if they decide to go this route and not the rumored mixed tag match that we've heard rumors of as well.
I'm totally all for the mixed tag match. I am for it. I say if they're not going to do, I'm feeling like Jeff Hardy. I'm conflicted, as JR used to say about Jeff Hardy. I'm feeling so conflicted because if they're not going to go Cena Orton, then the only thing I want Cena to do is that mixed tag match. Unless they're going to somehow do Miz Orton. I don't know what they're going to do at this point, but, you know, I don't know. I think the mixed tag match is the best way to go.
You're conflicted, but are you a conflicted mongoose, Jeff Hardy style?
I would not be.
All right. Speaking of the women, since we started with Nikki and Natalya, we'll talk women's title match. Alexa Bliss, Naomi. There is absolutely zero chance Naomi walks out champion, right?
You know, I don't know. They were really pushing Naomi a lot, you know, with her whole deal before she got hurt. And with the way they book things these days, I would not be shocked to see Naomi take the belt from her. You know, she's just gaining momentum, Alexa is. And I would not be surprised if they completely halted that momentum. You know, they did it with Cesaro and Sheamus in the tag titles. They were gaining momentum, and then snap of the fingers on Sunday, last Sunday, they took the titles away from them. So it would not surprise me to have them continue what they were doing with Naomi, because she was inevitably going to be taking the title at some point. I think, honestly, Alexa may have been the transitional champion to get to Naomi in the first place, but Naomi got hurt. Because remember, if you think back to whatever fucking pay-per-view it was, when Naomi beat Alexa in that impromptu match, you know, there's a backstory there. And so it would not surprise me to see Alexa lose the title to Naomi. Will it happen? I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
There's a distinct possibility we may get a third women's match added to the show, Becky Lynch and Mickie James.
That's a tough one to call. That really is. I mean, because, you know, they want Mickie to, you know, to gain some sort of ground, but at the same time, does it really matter if she gains ground and if she loses the match to Becky? I would say probably Becky would take the win there, but we'll have to wait and see what happens if they do that match.
All right, and now to the other match announcement that you missed, Tag Team Turmoil for the SmackDown Tag Team titles.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about that one. Okay. I'm super excited for Tag Team Turmoil because I love Tag Team Turmoil. It's my favorite. I think one of two things happens. Either they go weird on us and give us the Usos the titles after no build, or they just keep the titles on American Alpha where they belong. Or the Revival show up and they steal the Tag Team titles. Who knows what's going to happen? But I think Alpha keeps the belts.
I think the Usos walk out champions.
Really?
Think the Usos walk out champions. The Usos walk out champions, and we finally get the pay-per-view blow-off to the Usos and American Alpha that we never got originally as far as a singles match, a straight-up two-on-two tag match goes.
I am so confused about what's going on with the SmackDown Tag Team Division. Like, they brought it in. They brought the belts in. They did a great job of the tournament. They had some iffy stuff going on with, the Usos and American Alpha not really blowing anything off, like you said. But they're not on TV half the time. I mean, I sometimes forget that they have tag team titles on SmackDown because they keep not showing up on television. You know, it's like at least give them a little bit, give them a promo or something. You know, last week, you know, they did their open challenge, you know, and did their thing. But there are so many weeks where they're on, like, what's the SmackDown show? Is it Superstars, I guess? Their B show?
Well,
SmackDown's B show?
Superstar, one of them got canceled, so I don't think that there is a second show anymore.
So SmackDown doesn't have a
show?
Because that's where, from what I recall, that's where they were showing up for the longest time. They brought up American Alpha, made him look like a big deal. And then since they had to keep Heath Slater on the show, they had to give Heath Slater the tag team titles. So American Alpha fell off immediately. And then they stopped showing up on TV, and they were showing up only on, I guess it was Superstars. They were only showing up on the B show, and then all of a sudden they come back, and it's just I don't follow what they're doing with the tag team titles. They're confused on the tag team titles as much as I am, because they're not consistent, and it's frustrating to me as a big fan of tag team wrestling of how, and I brought it up when I was talking about Raw, but I'm just so not conflicted. I'm so frustrated with the lack of continuity with the tag team division. The Usos are heels, but have they really been around to do much after they blew out Gable's knee? Not really. You know, now they dress funny.
that's because Jimmy got hurt too. Jimmy messed up his ankle.
And again, that brings us right back to the point of why can't they just do something with them promo-wise? The guys are good promos. They can talk. Let them talk while they're injured. Keep them on TV. Because otherwise, you can't just, you know, snap your fingers and things go away and then snap your fingers again and it comes back and it stays as hot as it was. You know, keep them on TV. Keep them in their minds. Do something with them. But I didn't know that. I these days I'm not as big into, going on the websites and reading all the, I don't have time these days, to go through the websites and read up on all the news and see who's injured, who's not injured. I had no idea he was hurt. And the casual fan has the same idea. They're just like, hey, oh, yeah, the Usos. Whatever happened to them? You know, their heel turn has exactly zero momentum because they did the injury angle. Then I guess the one of them, whichever one you say was Jimmy. Is he the one who got hurt?
I think it was Jimmy.
Yeah. And so he gets hurt, and then they just disappear. So the people, you know, who don't read the websites, the people like myself who just don't have time anymore to check it out, it just goes away. And I had no idea that he was hurt. I just thought that they were just ignoring him, ignoring the whole team situation. So they're inconsistent and they're frustrating. And so whoever wins the tag team tomorrow, I don't know. It could be the Usos. But I think American Alpha needs to hold on to the titles. If they want to make something big and important happen, have them hold on to the tag team titles, rebuild the whole story from scratch, or almost from scratch. Use the the attack as the impetus, as it were, and then put them in there at WrestleMania and make them and have them go 1-on-1 at WrestleMania. But unless you want to have the chase angle, I'm just gonna keep rambling here. Unless you want to have the chase angle, and fine, then give them the belts tonight on Sunday night. Is it this Sunday night?
This Sunday night.
It is this Sunday night. Damn, that came up quickly, didn't it? Well, give them the titles on Sunday night, and then have American Alpha chase them, I guess.
And therein lies the problem for SmackDown too. Is they got kind of rushed into this. They got the pay per view that was 2 weeks after the Rumble, whereas Raw has 6 weeks to build the Fast Lane.
Yeah,
the only
I don't,
other match
I don't
that
understand
I can,
what they're doing.
The only other match that I can really think of to discuss further the Fast Lane for the Elimination Chamber pay per view is the Chamber match itself here. They're promising a new redesigned Elimination Chamber. Your thoughts?
Why? Those are my thoughts. Just like with the Hell in a Cell. Why? Why fix what ain't broken?
Maybe the original Elimination Chamber is too on PG and they're going to, like, add a bunch of cushions and stuff to make it more family-friendly? I don't know. You're asking the wrong person.
I'd be up for it. Let's do it. I'd make it trampolines! Yes! Yes! Oh, I just had the best... That was great. Let's do trampolines.
And then the next thing you know, we're going to have dudes riding around on Segways, Connor Claxton style.
Hey, I'm cool with that. I'm completely cool with guys in Segways in wrestling. I've never had a problem with that before. I will never have a problem with it again. But I just know they got to do it. Now, somebody call Shane McMahon. Does anybody have his number? Do you have his number? You're kind of big. You know people. Does Greg have his number? Greg has promoted some wrestling shows.
I don't know those people.
Oh, man. But, man, look, they have to happen now. There's got to be a trampoline elimination. Champ elimination. Yes!
Wait a second.
This is going to turn into the Harden's backyard set all over again.
Although I just had a really mean, horrible thought. Because if they're going to do and this is something that maybe Rick might say, knowing Rick a little bit that I do now. I was thinking because, you know, tramp, so women, they would call that the Women's Elimination Chamber. I kind of run off the rails there. I'm sorry.
I'm going to go ahead and just get back into the match itself here.
Yeah,
do
that.
Bray Wyatt, and I don't think it's a straight-up one-on-one match in Mania, though. I think it gets turned into a triple threat, and I would argue that the triple threat would be Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and Luke Harper.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It goes all down to the point where they're not going to put the title in the main event. So it doesn't really make a difference what they do. So they could go with the triple threat. They could go with, there's a whole lot of scenarios they could go with, which is what makes it kind of exciting. But I think in the end, there's definitely a Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton match happening at WrestleMania. So I'm thinking Cena and Miz have their thing, and they kind of tease something between them in the chamber match. Wyatt gets his way and kind of just beats the crap out of everybody. I'm hoping that Wyatt really runs the table and beats like four different guys. That would be wonderful, you know? And then AJ Styles is pissed off because he didn't get a title rematch. And then so he goes after Shane, and Shane and him have their match or whatever the fuck they're going to do with them, because that's not ridiculous. But no, I would. In bottom line, I would like to see Bray have like at least three eliminations, if not four eliminations, and take out everybody. Hell, I wouldn't even mind having him take out Cena.
What about the possible rumor of AJ Styles and Randy Orton at WrestleMania? Do you put any credence into that?
No, I wouldn't mind it, and I think it's something that's going to happen over the summer, but I don't think it's going to happen at WrestleMania.
I mean, that's my thought process anyways, is I've heard rumors of AJ Styles and Randy Orton at WrestleMania. That's a match that they want to do, so it wouldn't entirely surprise me to see that happening. But I do see Bray Wyatt coming out of the chamber as the WWE champion and going on to face Randy Orton at WrestleMania. And in addition, I do see Luke Harper being worked into that match as well. I think we can agree that overall the main event scene and the mid-card scene on SmackDown is a lot more fluid than the one on Raw is, but I would argue that the Raw tag team division is more developed.
Which is both a shame and true at the same time, because the Raw tag team division, I mean, they got a bunch of teams, but there's no continuity there. But you're right, they are more developed because they've got a bunch of teams. But yeah, SmackDown is just a mess. But yeah, as far as the mid-card goes, I mean, Raw has no mid-card. SmackDown, they've got one, kinda. But, I mean, right now it's just, at this point, it's Dean Ambrose, who's busy doing the main event stuff right now with the Elimination Chamber, and Dolph Ziggler, and then a bunch of losers. You know, you got Kalisto, you got Apollo Crews, and that's really pretty much it. You know, the things have kind of fallen away. I mean, because at this point, Corbin's there. But what are they going to do with Corbin? That's, you know, that's something we need to talk about. What are they going to do with Baron Corbin?
Corbin and Ambrose for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania.
Are they going to go there? Are they going to go with are they going to go
that's
with him defending his crown? I've heard rumblings about him defending his crown in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which I think would be silly because he's above that now. But I've heard those rumors where he's going to him and Strowman are going to be involved in that. I don't think I would necessarily mind it because because it makes sense that they have him and Braun Strowman in there as the last two guys. And as long as they put it on the main show and not the kickoff, but
I think that him and Strowman having some kind of interaction would be entertaining due to the fact that Corbin did eliminate Strowman from the Rumble.
Hell, I wouldn't mind them just fucking straight up doing those two in a match. Why not? You're gonna have an interpromotional match. Won't they? Could do that.
I would argue that both of them are significantly improved over where they were this time last year, so I honestly can't say that I disagree with that.
Yeah, give them 7 or 8 minutes, have them beat each other up, and then have the ring explode or something so they don't have, neither one of them has to lose, and go with it.
Exploding ring. It's Baron Corbin versus Braun Strowman in an exploding ring death match.
Yes, exactly. And there's no finish because the ring explodes and they both somehow come out alive. Because except for The Undertaker and Paul Bearer in 2004, WWE does not kill characters.
How dare you bring up Paul Bearer? Rest in peace, Mr. All right, but in all seriousness, though, that is going to wrap it up for us in regards to the show here. Now it's time to get into our final reaction for the evening here. It is your best match or moment, your worst match or moment, your overall score, and your MVP. So what's your best match or moment from tonight's episode of Raw?
I would say my best match and or moment on here. You know, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to go with Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns just because I'm excited to watch it as soon as we're done here tonight. So I'm going to say my best match / moment is Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe. We'll say the overarching storyline of the evening between Joe just being out there and being on Raw, which just it was like surreal to me to see Joe talking with a microphone in the middle of the ring on Raw. And then the match, which sounds like it was very enjoyable. So I'm going to go ahead and go with that being my best match / moment.
Hashtag watch wrestling.
What else we got?
Worst match or moment. Your least favorite match or moment, I guess, technically.
My least favorite. That's not to say there really wasn't anything bad necessarily on the show. It was pretty smooth overall. I guess we'll go moment. I'll go with my mix, and I think you missed my point a little bit earlier too. So I'll bring it back up. My worst moment was the making of the Strowman versus Reigns match at Fastlane. My reasoning being is that Foley could have been like, no, you know what? You keep pulling this bullshit with me, demanding shit from me. No, I'm not just going to give you this match. You have to, you know, you have to earn this match, blah, 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 whatever the case may be. And then Strowman goes, no, I want him next week. And Foley goes, no, you've got to wait until Fastlane. You know, something like that. Instead of going, hey, you know what? You've got a match in 4 weeks. You know, Strowman should want him now. Strowman should want him to, like, next week. He should ask for him. And Foley should make him wait until Fastlane. So that kind of annoyed me a little bit, is that there was a lack of build in the actual promo itself.
You forget that the Raw creative staff doesn't allow Mick Foley to show his spine but once a month.
This is true. This is true. And he almost tried to show his spine during the opening promo, but, you know, kind of just got beat down in a very silent way. And it was very sad to watch.
But he did get to make the match, though, so he had that going for him.
This is true.
He did get to make Joe versus Reigns, so he had that going for him. All right, how about your overall show rating for tonight?
I'm going to go ahead and give it a strong 7.5.
I was going to say, base this off of what you have seen, not what you're planning on watching.
Yes, I'm still going to go ahead and give it a 7.5 based on what I've seen. I didn't see the second Cruiserweight match. All I saw was the segment with them all. But up to what I've seen, so maybe I missed like the last maybe 30, 35 minutes or so of the show, I very much enjoyed it. I wasn't bored. It didn't drag at all for me. So I'll give it a solid 7.5. Hoping that if I enjoy the match later on tonight when I am done with this fine show this evening, hoping that I'll end up giving it an 8 after watching that match this evening.
by and large enjoyed Roman and Joe. I mean, I understand why the finish was done the way the finish was done in order to kind of protect Roman, but at the same time, I think that Roman or Joe's debut singles match on Raw probably should have had a clean finish, which is why I agree with your assessment that it should have been against somebody such as Sami Zayn or somebody that could have taken a loss and not really had to worry about it in the grand scheme of things. Regardless, who's your MVP for tonight?
MVP for the evening. It's a difficult one. Again, not having seen the entirety of the show, it's difficult for me. But I'm going to actually go ahead and say my MVP for the evening. Man, see, I've been thinking about this since 3 minutes ago when we started this segment. you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go with Corey Graves because Corey Graves is always my MVP. He's masterful on commentary, and I love him to death. So we're going to go with Corey Graves.
All right. I'll go ahead and do the rundown myself here. Favorite match or moment from tonight was the opening segment. I really enjoyed Joe being allowed to show some of that fire that us fans who have been a fan of Joe for a long time know that he's capable of. And if you'd ever told me back then that Joe would end up with a live microphone on an episode of Monday Night Raw one night, I'd have told you you were out your damn mind.
I disagree. 100% I disagree with you. I thought it was going to happen 10 years ago, to be completely honest with you.
Knowing Vince's aversion towards people with Joe's body type, see Owens, Kevin, I'm shocked both of them are on Raw, frankly.
I just felt it, man. Back in 2004, 2005, when Mick Foley was really pushing for it, I really, honestly, in my heart, thought Joe was coming. I really did. I was very sad to see that didn't happen. His run to TNA was good, but I really thought he was going.
Foley thought for sure it was happening too because Joe was supposed to be signed at the same time Punk was.
Whatever happened with it? Like, was Joe hurt or something? Did Joe not pass a physical, or did they just not sign him because he was fat?
They didn't sign him because of his appearance. They didn't sign him because of his appearance, and he ended up going to TNA.
And kicking major ass back when TNA was on internet only, baby. Those are the good days of TNA.
At least favorite match or moment tonight, I'm going to... ignoring Stephanie's bickering. I'm going to go with the tag team title match. And I'm not specifically referring to the match. I'm going to go with the finish here. Telegraphed way in advance, obvious setup for a triple threat match for Fastlane there. Just a way to get another match on the card and kind of screw us out of what should have been an entertaining one-on-one contest itself tonight. Overall show ratings a 7. I wasn't quite as big of a fan of tonight's show as you were, but at the same time, I really enjoyed last week's show too, and I thought tonight was a little bit of a step down from last week's show just because you had a really hot crowd last week in Texas, and you had the huge surprise of Samoa Joe making his debut on Raw, plus having Triple H on Raw as well helped add to the intrigue. And in my opinion, Paul Heyman cut a candidate for early promo of the year last week on Raw, too, with his Yeah, But promo.
I still have to watch that. I have not seen that from last week's show yet. So I have to watch that myself because I've heard a lot of people talking about it. So I've got to go back and I'll check that out after I watch the rest of Raw tonight.
And I will give my MVP for tonight to Samoa Joe.
Yeah, makes sense. I think if I had seen the main event, I probably would have gone there, too. But since I didn't, I can't fairly assess. So that's why Corey Graves, number one SmackDown or Raw announcer.
My group of friends constantly pops for Funaki when they show him at pay-per-views.
I do too. It's wonderful and it makes me happy.
It has been a running scene that as soon as they show him, we all just yell, Funaki! And like go crazy.
Well, you should. He deserves it.
I do believe that is officially going to do it for us. Nick, thanks so much for filling in for Tony tonight. It's great. Appreciate it, sir.
Thank you again for having me. I'm always up for this. It's a good time.
We will be back next Monday night. Hopefully, Tony will be with us once again, and we will break down, to an extent, the SmackDown pay-per-view. I know it doesn't tie into Raw so much, but it is a pay-per-view. We do discuss pay-per-views on this show as well. My pay-per-view post-show review returns this Friday on the W2M Network. You can listen to myself and Patrick Ketza as we go live at 11:30 Eastern to break down all of the happenings of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view over on the W2M Network. Again, myself, Tony, Rick, hopefully we'll be back next Monday night for the reaction here. You've been listening to the Raw Reaction here on ProWrestling.biz Radio. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next Monday. You can go ahead and beat Tony here and hit his line if you want to.
What's his line? Oh, God.
Deuces, bitches!
Yeah, deuces.
Sarah, Harry Broaddus, and Rick Bailey.
You have been listening to the Raw Reaction on ProWrestling.BizRadio. Join us tomorrow night for the Greg DeMarco Show with Patrick O'Dowd as they preview the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view this Sunday on the WWE Network. This has been the Raw Reaction on ProWrestling.BizRadio. Hey, guys, if you're still listening, my bad on that. I forgot we were still on the air, and me and Nick got into a conversation in the queue there, so my bad on that one. But thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Monday.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.